Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Monday, June 14th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or in the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. That book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect in my life for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life, manage my emotions and relationships, and effectively turn any negative emotional state that I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted with. You can also click on a link on that page that lets you download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a PDF file. You can download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope you do that soon and often. You can also download a list of a host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have called in and been stepped through the process of that Reality Management Worksheet, or they've called to give testimonials about how positively the application of that tool has affected their lives. And we hope people do that soon and often because when they do, it raises questions or they have their own testimonials or comments, and they can call us at 563-999-3581 and press 1. And if they do that, it'll put a little question mark by their phone number and I'll announce them by their area code. We've also made the commitment to go through the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and we are on the 165th day of the year. Today's lesson reads, Let not my mind deny the thought of God. The commentary reads, What makes this world seem real except your own denial of the truth that lies beyond this world? What but your thoughts of misery and death could obscure the perfect happiness and the eternal life that the Creator wills for you? And what could hide what cannot be concealed except illusion? What could keep from you what you already have except your choice to see it? Denying it is there. The thought of God created you. The thought of the Creator, the mind energy of creation itself, gave rise to you. It has never left you, nor have you ever been apart from it for an instant. This mind energy, this creative force, belongs to you. By it you live, and it is your source of life, holding you together with it, one with it, and everything is one with you because it has left you not. The thought of the Creator protects you, cares for you, makes soft your resting place and smooth your way, lighting your mind with happiness and love. Eternity and everlasting life shine in your mind because the thought of the Creator has left you not, and this still abides with you. Who would deny the Creator's safety and peace and joy, his healing and his peace of mind, his quiet rest, his calm awakening? But if you but recognized that they abide, would he not instantly prepare to go where they are found, abandoning all else as worthless in comparison with them? And having found them, would he not make sure that he stay with them, that he remain with them? So, deny not the heaven. It is yours today, but for the asking. Nor need you perceive how great the gift, how changed your mind will be before it comes to you. Ask to receive, and it is given you. Conviction lies within it. Until you welcome it as yours, uncertainty remains. Yet the Creator is fair. Sureness is not required to receive what only your acceptance can bestow. Ask with desire. You need not be sure that you request the only thing you want. But when you have received, you will be sure you have the treasure you've always sought. What would you then exchange for it? What would induce you now to let it fade away from your ecstatic vision? For this sight proves that you have exchanged your blindness for the seeing eyes of Christ. Your mind has come to lay aside denial and accept the thought of God as your inheritance. Now is all doubting past. The journey's end made certain and salvation has been given to you. Now is Christ's power in your mind to heal as you were healed. For now you are among the saviors of the world. Your destiny lies there and no one else. Would God consent to let his offspring remain forever starved by his denial of the nourishment that he needs to live? Abundance dwells in him, and deprivation cannot cut him off from creation's sustaining love and his home. Practice today in hope, for hope is indeed justified. Your thoughts are meaningless, for God is certain, and the thought of him is never absent. Sureness must abide within you who are lost to him. This course removes all doubts which you have interposed between your Creator and your certainty of your Creator. We count on the creation and not upon ourselves to give us certainty. And in his name, we practice his word as his word directs that we do. The Creator's sureness lies beyond every doubt. His love remains beyond our every fear. The thought of the Creator is still beyond all dreams and in our minds according to his will. So that is lesson 165 and the Course in Miracles experiment with Pam Grout. Lesson 165 is titled Dismantling the Illusion. She quotes Socrates as saying, "There is no disease of the body apart from the mind." Pam writes, "Lesson 165, let not my mind deny truth. This lesson says, the only thing obscuring my perfect happiness are my thoughts and beliefs. This lesson says my feelings and interactions with the world are reproduced in physical reality." In 1980, Evie McDonald was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. By the time doctors finally determined her illness, she was, to use her own words, quote, a bowl of jello in a wheelchair. The doctors told her at best she had 6 months to live. After raging about the unfairness of it for a day or two, she had this thought. Well, since I'm dying anyway, why not use the short time I have left to finally learn to love myself unconditionally? For years, she despised her body. She was overweight, for one thing. The polio she'd had as a child left her with two withered limbs. And, well, she was hard-pressed to find anything she really liked about her physical body. Three times a day, she rolled her wheelchair to the mirror and sat naked. She refused to leave until she found new positives to add to her list. Her hair was pretty, for starters. She decided that whatever it took, she would learn to accept herself. She resolved to give all negative feelings and thoughts over to God. At some point, she crossed some kind of miraculous threshold. She actually began to feel love and compassion for herself. She began to see her body as a miracle of creation, to see herself as a blessed being capable of great joy. Strength began to return to her limbs. She eventually began to walk, became able to feed and clothe herself. Abby McDonald became the first person to recover completely from ALS. And 38 years later, she's still ALS-free. As Lesson 165 clearly states, the only healing necessary is giving up old beliefs, changing the way I think, feel, and interact with the world. So that's our lesson for today and the Course in Miracles experiment commentary. And we have 48 minutes left for comments, questions, answers, soliloquies. What's on your mind today? How would you like to spend this hour? We are blessed to have at least 45 solid minutes to talk, to entertain your comments and your questions, to help you explore the fundamental principles underlying these tools and or the specific use of these tools. Over the weekend, I've dealt with people who were struggling to accept that as they are, they're perfect. Not perfect according to some ideal or some sense of never making anything, any kind of a statement or behavior that they would rather not have made or done, but perfect in the sense of they are a part of the extension of the creative energy and form, and as such, they're a miracle of life. They are as magnificent as any sunset or sunrise or any wild animal that they might look at and have an awe state emerge for themselves. And so, despite the fact that we will forever be able to compare ourselves to some kind of an idealized list of shoulds and should nots and come up short, the fact of the matter is the miracle of life is expressing in, through, as, and around us. And we have the ability, should we decide to accept it, to appreciate ourselves deeply and profoundly in each new present moment. And if we choose to get in touch with the awareness of our true nature prior to speaking or acting, we will most likely dramatically increase the chances that we'll be happy with the results or the consequences of our thoughts and our words and our actions. But when we act from the unhappy states, the what we would call the anger, the fear, the sadness, the hurt, we dramatically increase the chances that we will not the least bit like the results we get. So we have specific tools that we can use to help ourselves reconnect to that awareness of our true nature as a miracle of life expressing in form. We could, if we chose to, reconnect with nature and be filled with the awe of what that expression of the creative energy is like, whether it's birds singing or frogs chirping or wind moving the trees or any number of wild animals that exist without all of the, as far as we know, without all of the mental machinations that we as humans use to torture ourselves, essentially. So we have the honor of making available these tools at whyagain.org absolutely free, that we can use one situation at a time to map out what is it we're doing in our thoughts. So here's the Course in Miracles experiment today. It says, listen, you're the one that's creating your upset. You're the one that's creating an illusion of life as being painful and sad and scary, when what has been created is magnificent beyond words. And when you're experiencing something less than that, it's a direct product of your thought processes creating your experience. So if you pick up a reality management worksheet, you go through the first three steps and it helps you map out what you're doing specifically with your mind and your mind energy to create the experience that you're having. And most of us pick up a worksheet because we're not happy with, we do not like, appreciate, or want to continue the experience we're having in that moment. And so here you are in the reality management worksheet, the first three steps, you literally get to map out what you're doing with your mind energy, with the goal you're holding, with the thoughts you're using to create the negative emotions, with the dynamic that you're focused on between you and the world or you and some other person in specific, and how you're using that to create your own pain, fear, sadness, or other negative emotion. And then it asks you to do something completely different than what we've been trained to do. What we've been trained to do is rely almost exclusively on our conscious logical, we think it's logical, thought process. And we look for an answer to this negative emotional state we're experiencing within that conscious logical thought process. The problem with that is it's that very conscious logical thought process that is creating the upset we're experiencing. So we're asked to put that aside, cancel everything we think we want. As A Course in Miracles would say, your trifling treasures put away, and open a curtain in your practice by asking to be shown the hidden part of your own mind that's actually creating this upset. And one situation at a time, one worksheet at a time, one asking to be shown at a time, I can clear away the illusion that keeps me from seeing my perfect safety, my true nature, the true nature of the people and things around me. And as I mentioned in the intro, there are a host of audio files available where people have done just that, and they've called in to be stepped through the worksheet process because they were feeling hatred, fear, terror, rage, confusion, guilt, shame. And one worksheet at a time, people have transformed their awareness from the belief that this was being done to them from the outside or the life situation or some person to the actual dynamics within themselves that they were holding on to. And as Diedrich Wolsack would call it, these core beliefs that they hold. And when I uncover a core belief and I discover that because it's negative, that means it's false, and I dismantle my continued belief in it as true, once I dismantle that belief, once I let go of it, it no longer has any power over me. There's a point in Course in Miracles where it says, you must only return to the original error in thought and see it as error in order for all of the negative effects of that thought to be dismantled. So while it is not a miracle in the sense that most of us think of miracles, it is miraculous in its impact and its benefit, as is the Reality Management Worksheet. As I discover what my mind is doing to create the pain I say I don't want to feel, when my mind actually awakens to the realization that it is the source of my pain, not the solution to it, that's when my mind stops. That's an awareness stated in Guy Finley's terms. Saying that I want something good and loving, saying that I am love and that I am a good person, that I do value myself, that's a nice thing to do. And at the same time I may spend a lot of energy doing that, I can unwittingly be holding on to a negative belief, a core belief that I am not worthy and that I don't deserve happiness and that there is that I'm not a good parent or I'm not a good enough therapist. And it's the part of my mind that's holding on to that core negative belief that some would say actually chooses the emotions that I feel, generates the thoughts that I pour a lot of mental energy into. And as we observe in this work, pouring mental energy into a pattern of thoughts is what creates my emotions. So if I'm having a negative emotional state and I don't really enjoy those negative emotional states, I can choose again. And that's one of the things that the Course in Miracles is very frequently asking us to do. Choose again. Choose anew. Understand that it's your choice of the focus of your conscious awareness that actually creates your experience of life in each moment. So if you don't like what you're experiencing in life in this moment, it's absolutely possible for you to change it. But in order to do that, you have to change what you're focusing your energy on. You have to acknowledge your role in creating the pain, the fear, the sadness, the guilt, the shame that you're experiencing, and step out of what most of us have been trained into by this culture, which is that belief that we're a victim, and step out of the victim role and step into that role of conscious co-creation. As Dr. Michael Rice likes to say in his lectures, we're always contributing. We're always creating. Because the mind energy that we have dominion over is always on. We can't turn it off. What we do have the ability to do is choose the focus of it. And most of us have been unwittingly focusing on things we didn't want. Our culture trains us to talk about how we hate this or that and we don't want this and that. And despite the training that we have to focus on something different, we don't want this, we don't want that, we are not trained to focus specifically on what we do want and use our mind energy creatively to bring that about. And that's what the full use of these tools so often does. It helps me dismantle the focus on all the things I don't want. It helps me uncover the beliefs that I have been holding on to that are most often negative in their nature, and choose again. Choose to be focusing consciously on the awareness that my value is internal and is derived from the fact that I'm alive. It's never been devalued or discredited because of anything I said or did or didn't say and do. And once I tune into that awareness and remind myself of it and decide to have that as my focus prior to taking an action or making a statement, I'm going to dramatically improve the chances that I like the results. You know, I was dealing with somebody earlier and they were just beside themselves because they've done something horribly wrong. And my response in this kind of situation is always, please be gentle with yourself. You've already recognized that you wish you had done differently, and you don't have a time machine, so you can't go back and undo this. And yet you can make the admission that it was an error. You can make corrective statements and behaviors. And that's all any of us can do. And when you're willing to do that, when you model for someone owning the decisions you've made and the negative consequences of it, you make apologies where necessary, you make amends where necessary, and then you choose differently going forward. This is the most any of us can do. And this is tremendously healing for everybody involved, anybody that saw me make the, quote, error or mistake, and anybody who's watching me take responsibility for it. Because there I'm teaching by example, which is, you know, the only way any of us truly teach. And so I was coaching this person to understand that labeling herself as bad or wrong was comparing her to some kind of an idealized model of a person. And there's never been a person who fit that idealized model every day in every way kind of thing. Especially when most of us have been raised by parents that were traumatized in their youth and or didn't have good parenting models themselves and or believed that every time they made a mistake, it made them a lesser person, so they were busy beating themselves up. So our hope is to be able to transform the way we experience ourselves and the way we drop the pretense that we could ever be perfect in the sense of never going against some idealized model of behavior, and understand that our value is not derived from the words we say and do or the actions we take. It is clearly derived because we have the life breath within us. So one of the things that came up over the weekend working with somebody was the concept of the book from Mark Wolin, It Didn't Start With You, the concept of cross-generational patterns. How many of us came from an absolutely perfect upbringing? None. How many of us went through life and never had a loss, never had anything go against any goal that we set? None. How many of us had parents that were perfect and raised perfectly? None. You know, Michael Rice likes to talk about just go back a couple generations, and there's nobody on the planet whose bloodline doesn't include exposure to war and genocide and loathing, and there's no one on the planet whose bloodline hasn't been affected by these dramatically negative things. And in the book, it didn't start with you, and in the work with the family constellations work, they understand this quite deeply, and they help people work with identifying and releasing some of the negative core beliefs that most of us have downloaded, or we were born with energetically, with the impressions of these things. As I become aware of them, then I can choose differently. As long as it remains hidden from me, I can't affect it. Can't affect change in it. And as Diedrich Wolczak likes to point out in his work, you know, it is so much more efficient to get in and correct a fundamental negative belief than it is to try and do behavior management. If I can correct the behavior, if I can just keep myself from doing this bad thing or that bad thing, well, that's an endless trap. It's like Dr. Michael Rice likes to talk about the difference between doing something that looks at a cause level and something that deals with effects. And if you're chasing after effects and trying to change effects, it's an endless, thankless task. It will never give you the results you want. But if you're able to come at the problem and look at the cause level, you can shift some things, and then the transformation is near effortless at the effect level because the effects fall away once we've dismantled the cause. This is why Gabor Mate's work with the addictions process and trauma is so powerful, because he says, instead of asking why the addiction, ask why the pain. And if you get at the cause level, Dr. Michael Rice says that his experience has been that if you look at this as this useful, a very useful definition for addiction, is this operational definition that says it's the compulsive use of any action, any substance, any person, any activity to either numb myself out from pain or to keep myself from being aware of and acting from my highest guidance. And many, many times when we help people dismantle their pain, their use of their addictive substance falls off, because the only reason they were putting up with all the negative effects was because it helped numb them out to pain and or awareness of their highest guidance. I often have people say, well, why would somebody want to avoid awareness of and acting from their highest guidance? And I say, well, because they've got a belief that says they have to avoid those behaviors that their highest guidance tells them would be beneficial, usually because of a family pattern or some pattern of belief that's derived from trauma. I've had people that were absolutely convinced that if they gave up their addiction, whether it was drinking or other drugs, that they would not be able to be as funny or as creative. I've had people who have been absolutely convinced that if they didn't drink, they would be excluded from their friends group, or that they would be unknowable to their family. So their highest guidance might say, hey, Tim, this drink is not helping you. This is ruining your life and your relationships. And so the highest guidance would be stop drinking. Stop doing this drug. Stop compulsively shopping. Stop, you know, whatever the compulsive behavior is that you're using to gnaw out from your pain. address the pain directly. And my training, my conditioning, my experience with my family might be saying, hey, Tim, if you do that, you're going to get kicked out of the family. You're going to get excommunicated, in effect. And you would never survive if you got kicked out of the family. And there, with that set of conclusions in hand, I continue the use of the behavior or the substance or the compulsive practice, and I don't have to deal with this negative impact that I'm sure is going to happen. Yeah, but Tim, your liver is shot, and you know, you've lost 7 jobs in the last 10 years, and it's getting worse. Yeah, but at least I've got my family and friends. So there's the kind of mechanism that so often drives us to use substances or behavior patterns that are overtly detrimental and that we can see that they're harmful in different ways and yet feel compelled to continue using them. Fortunately, with tools like the Reality Management Worksheet and the targeted journaling that Michael calls the Mind Shifter tool, I can uncover some of those. And by uncover, I mean I can move them from a place where I do not want to look at them, where it's almost impossible for me to turn my glance to them, to remember them, to be that deeply honest with myself about those fears and beliefs, and move them into my conscious awareness where now I can deal with them. And once I'm doing that, I'm working at a cause level. It's not that hard. I fear it's going to be terribly hard, but it's an irrational fear. And most of the time, the part of me that is fearful is a much younger part of me. It's not the adult, Tim. It's not the licensed clinical psychologist and public speaker, and it's the part of me that's been triggered into activity that got downloaded sometime in my earliest years. And that's another reason that the worksheet that Michael and Jeannie offer called 3 Early Memories of Conflict can be so beneficial. And if you double this stuff up and you use the 3 Early Memories of Conflict with the Reality Management Worksheet and or Diedrich Wolsack's Choose Again 6-Step Method to Freedom, you can make significant progress. And it begins with a deeper level of honesty, profound honesty. You know, sometimes I wish there wasn't anything about confidentiality and we were all really open and honest with each other. And I could tell stories about people whose lives transform simply because they stop lying to themselves and others. And this is why these 2 books that I've recommended before, the book Untamed by Glennon Doyle and the book by Laura McGowan, The Surprising Magic of a Sober Life. These 2 books talk about this profound level of honesty that's a prerequisite for deep healing, better than all kinds of other books I've read. And I've had a number of people recently that I've been dealing with where when they get to the level where they finally say, okay, enough is enough. I have felt tortured for so long, I'll do anything. And we suggest that they turn to a profound, rigorous level of honesty with themselves, and the transformation begins to happen. And I'm talking about people who have done all kinds of other spiritual work and psychological work, people who've had tremendous success in their lives. You know, they're retiring in their 50s and they've got plenty of money and they travel and they're tortured until they reach a deep level of honesty with themselves and then beginning with one or two other close friends. But that honesty is the only way through. You know, you've heard this over and over again. The only way out is through. And if I can be profoundly honest with myself, that's the doorway to healing. And people routinely are just shocked by the positive response or the lack of any kind of negative response, which they were dreading, and that's what kept them being only partially true or completely hiding the truth, when they just open up and they admit to themselves and others, hey, I've got a food issue. I've got an alcohol issue. I have a self-loathing issue. Name your secret. When people just start speaking openly and honestly, beginning with that deep level of honesty for themselves and then sharing with a few friends, close friends that are safe, it is life-changing, staggeringly life-changing, how positive change begins to happen and cascading in people who've tried basically everything under the sun. Every self-help book, they've paid for therapy, they've taken medications. But the truth of it is nothing heals like honesty does. And nothing wounds like deceit and pretense. Guy Finley likes to talk about how pretense is just such a weight, and we're so well conditioned and trained to pretending and putting on a pretense in this culture that it isn't long we're into our teenage years and we don't realize where the pretense starts and stops. We don't know where reality, our true nature, actually lies because we're so conditioned to pretense, to pretending to be what we think other people want us to be, or pretending to be what we think we need to be to avoid a negative response from someone else. So, honesty heals like nothing else can, and deceit wounds like nothing else can. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And we have a caller with a hand up. Area code 828, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Dr. Tim. This is Magda.
Hello, Magda.
Hi. I'm calling in to testify. About what you're saying, to encourage anyone who's listening to what you've been saying about being honest with ourselves and valuing the truth. It is so right on. And I experienced this earlier this year when Mike Rice told me something that something about anger that I needed to let go of. And you know how people do a double take? What? Me? Anger? No. And, of course, I didn't see myself or experience myself in any way as having anger because I'd been taught to be a good, quiet, nice little girl. And all my life I worked on doing that. However, I trust him. I trust the process. And I began to work with that issue. And I found out that I had a great deal of fear about something you talked about just a little while ago, about knowing that about myself. And I was afraid that if I started to look into it, I was going to find out that I had an inner bitch. And I didn't want to know that. And kept me diverting my attention for quite a long time. And then I finally decided, okay, it's time to dive in and see what's in there. And I found out that, yeah, there are times I am and have been judgmental, and there are times when that judgment against myself or others has been really negative, and yet that does not in any way make me a negative person. It's just that I've had some negative thoughts and judgmental thoughts. And so I found out that what was in there wasn't really very bad at all. Wasn't as horrible and scary as I thought it might be. And it has opened me in my work, my inner work, to do a whole lot of deeper work, because I can now accept the truth and feedback that other people give me, which I was not open to before, because I wouldn't actually accept my own truth. Anyhow, so I just wanted to let everyone who's listening know that everything you're saying is right on, bingo, on target. And I also wanted to ask if you would repeat the name and authors of those two books.
We Are the Luckiest is the first title, by Laura McGowan, McKowen.
Okay.
The Surprising Magic of a Sober Life. But the title itself is We Are the Luckiest. Subtitle is The Surprising Magic of a Sober Life. And then the other book is Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And these two women write very directly and very beautifully about this fundamental level of profound truth that's necessary, and each of them in their own right talk about it as the hardest thing, even though you would think, oh, come on, pretty easy, just tell the truth. Well,
right.
In this culture, there are two primary factors here that make that so difficult. One is, in this culture, we are conditioned to hide things. We are conditioned to lie. We're conditioned to try and make ourselves look better than we actually are.
Right.
And then the other factor that makes it so difficult is the part of us that is fearful of telling the truth is a much younger part of us, a part of us that does not have full access to our adult coping mechanisms and wisdom and life experience. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's a guaranteed thing. Very few things in this life are guaranteed, but it's guaranteed that if I'm upset, I'm never upset for the reason I think I am. It's always about something in the past. If there's something really serious and important going on right now, it needs my attention. It does not need me to be upset. It needs my full attention. It needs me to have the highest level of evidence, clarity of vision, and full access to my resources, both emotional and logical. But if I get upset with a negative emotion, I instantly do not have full access to my logical resources.
Right.
And then I don't make my best decisions. And then I don't have full access to my life coping skills that I've learned over the years. So, if I'm upset, if I'm in pain, I'm in error. And when I'm in error, I'm not a good resource for solutions to life's problems, no matter how serious they are. And if I want to be a better resource for solutions to problems, I need to understand that my upset in any moment is about the past. And if I have a fear about something that's an emotional fear, it's false. It's rooted in a false belief.
Well, that's a good point.
Guy Finley says, you know, there's two things that have to happen, two false beliefs that have to be bought into by a person in order for them to feel fear. The first thing is they have to falsely believe that whatever is happening, whatever situation is in front of them, is bigger than them and is going to defeat them in one way or another. That's a false belief. There is nothing that you're ever going to meet in life that's bigger than your true self. The second false belief, right in line with that first one, is that whatever this life situation or person is that's in front of you is going to be able to take something from you that you desperately need or keep you from getting something that you desperately need. And that's a false belief because all these spiritual traditions teach us there's nothing of value that can be taken from us and nothing of value that can be added unto us at that deep level, our true nature.
Mm-hmm.
So every time we have a fear that's psychological in nature, it's based in these two false beliefs.
Really true. I was thinking, too, about what you said a little while ago about telling the truth. And for most of us, all of us, the truth that we've learned to tell is our truth, our own reality. So we don't even let ourselves be aware of what is actual, the actuality of a situation. So because we keep ourselves blind that way, we can't really tell the truth.
Yeah, and we don't know what we don't know. But we do have some, you know, we do have some wonderful guides if we've learned to interpret them correctly. My negative emotions are my guide telling me, hey, Tim, your thoughts are off the mark.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't learn that from my parents. I didn't learn that in school. I didn't learn that in the training for a doctorate in clinical psychology. But now that I understand it, now that I've been introduced to that level of questioning and seen the truth of it, I can take advantage of it. I can
mm-hmm.
use any negative emotional state as my part of that, as I say in the intro, as a part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted. And I can use any negative emotional state I have to help me become aware of the fact that my thoughts are mm-hmm. off the mark. And if I take a breath and get focused and cancel my goal, and I can choose again. I can ask to be shown an entirely different way to look at this life situation.
So
and more
true.
Often than not, with practice, I will start to see things dramatically differently with that process.
And dramatically quicker is what I'm experiencing. With practice, indeed. Yeah. I had an image come up when you were talking about using our emotions as feedback and a guide, and I've never seen this before, but the image was the flashing yellow light on a traffic light that it's flashing. Hey, listen, hey, watch out. Hey, get ready to find out something. So I think I'm going to keep that image. That's a good one.
Yeah, as long as I'm looking inside for what I might find, yes.
Right.
Rather than looking at culture teaches. Yeah, my culture teaches me to scan the outside environment and figure out who out there I need to attack or run away from or bribe or seduce to get them to change. But when I have that negative emotional state, if I can rewire my brain to say, okay, Tim, there's an error inside you in your assumptions, in your beliefs, in your observations, that's when I start making progress.
Indeed it is. Yeah, you're so right on. Oh, okay. Great. Thank you. Well, I just wanted to touch base with you and everybody who's listening and saying it really works. It works to learn how to tell ourselves our not only our truth, but the actuality truth. And it opens up many, many doors of deeper learning about ourselves. So that's all I wanted to add.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the call. It's good to hear your voice. It's been a long time.
Well, I listen most times, but I love listening to you and Susan and other people, and we get into such great conversations. So thank you for all of that.
Sometimes
there is a wee little question that I might want to ask. You know, not a real important thing, but just a little bit of thing. And I hesitate because you are on such a wonderful roll. And I'm going to use the word lecture, but you're not lecturing at people. You're teaching. And you seem to just be in the zone. And there's no way I want to call and interrupt that. I'd rather listen to what you're sharing. So that happens too.
All right. Well, thank you for the call and the input. I'm glad that you find it useful. And I'll look forward to the next time you choose to share with us.
Very good. Okay. Blessings.
All right. Blessings to you too. So we only have a minute or so left until the switchover. So I will remind us all that we have two support groups that are available. One is tomorrow night and one is Thursday night. These are available free to people since our coronavirus stuff has happened. They're both available online through Zoom, and the information about how to join us is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. I'll remind people that there's a separate page for the information for Tuesday and Thursday group. It's different login information. And we'd appreciate it if you'd join us or pass that information along to somebody you know that might be interested. Both of those groups meet from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And we're always grateful when people choose to join us and share their thoughts. We do have some people that just listen and don't participate that much. That's also quite fine. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love. And everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate that. I came on just as you were, I'm going to have to re-listen to the show because I came on just as you were talking about the two things, that nothing's bigger than us or nothing's, I like that. I'm going to have to re-listen.
Yeah, one of them is this false belief that whatever we're facing is bigger than we are, and there is nothing that's bigger than our true nature. And the second one is that whatever we're facing has the power to either keep us from getting something we truly need or is there to take something from us that we truly need. And that's not possible because there's nothing of value that can be taken from us and there's nothing of value that can be added unto us in the truest sense of our true self. And that's from Guy Finley, one of his many talks. So
awesome.
Have a
okay.
Wonderful show.
Thank you. Appreciate you. All right. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Monday, June the 14th, 2021. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I will just let you know that the app is up and running on the iPhone. So if you've already got it, please grab the update. If you've never opened the app, then go to your store, your Apple store, and look up Heartland, HEARTLAND, Aramaic, ARAMAIC, forgiveness, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And it'll pop up. It's a glowing heart. And download it. And you can now do the current seven-step worksheet. You can do the abbreviated worksheet. You can do the Dragon Klingon game, and there's also five different commitments that you can download. And so all of that is on your app. It's totally free, totally private. And so, you know, put that tool to work in your life. You can have it with you all the time because everybody's always got their phone with them. And we hope that by Tuesday, around 2:30 Eastern time, Google will have taken their upload, and that will be active for the Android version. And it'll be the same changes, and we've fixed some glitches where you couldn't print when you got to the end of it or you couldn't save it to your phone. And so those have been fixed. The commitments have been added, and then there were a few places like where you fill in, you know, your trigger and what happened and your feelings, your emotions, your thoughts. And then later in the worksheet, when it mentions those specific steps, it will fill in that information for you so you don't have to remember what you wrote three screens back. And so that's been fixed. So we hope you enjoy it and put it to work. And welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And thank you for all your work on that. I know it's been another Herculean task. It's kind of weird. I don't understand how, you know, so many of those features work fine on the app, and then all of a sudden they didn't. Is it to do with an update that Google
does
on the Android, or is this strange?
They had sent a note out. Then this was just right before I started trying to find. I was trying to get back in touch with the people who did it originally in India, so I didn't have to explain from the beginning. But they weren't doing the same type of work that they had been doing before, so I couldn't get the same ones. So finding someone who could do it, but what happened is they have come up with so many new phones, and they said that all of the apps for them to work in the Play Stores or in the iPhone Store or whatever, they had to be able to work on all the new phones and all the new iPads and all of, you know. So originally they had said, like, version 8, which is what our apps had gone up to. And, of course, now iPhones and Androids are up to, like, version 20. So it's just somehow the way that the phone is laid out, the way the digital world works or whatever. I don't understand all that, but it had to be compatible with the newest phones. And actually they said up to 10, but I asked the developer to go ahead and make it all the way up to 20 because I figured in another year that the same thing would happen again. So it has been made to where it is usable, workable, lays out properly or whatever on all of them, all the way up to 20. So we should be fine for a little while.
Cool. Yeah, just the way those phones not work, but don't work. When stuff like that happens, it's like one day it's working and same phone the next day. What happened here? So anyway, strange. Well, I'll welcome everybody. We're honored and delighted that you're here with us today to be part of this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness. And I'm going to start right in with a little bit of reading from Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We're in chapter 14, Choosing Teachers, is where we've graduated to, page 79, if you're reading along with us. And we're talking to Richard, this character in the book, about the Aramaic language. And kind of extending our conversation from the last chapter, talking about how distorted the Aramaic words have become in the Greek to the English translations. And my last comment to him in the reading we did on Friday, was, the translations appear sound, but are twisted just enough to cover up the wisdom that was available through the original words. I'm always amazed by people who study Greek interpretations, often called translations of Aramaic teachings, and have no interest in the actual meaning of what they've studied. Without access to the originally intended meanings, which can only be understood through a mechanism of through a comprehension of the conceptual framework of the Aramaic mind, it's difficult for people to apply the tools that were originally taught. Sound teachings have gone from being practical and down-to-earth tools to being impractical and unattainable. As a result, people miss out on the knowledge, understanding, healing benefits, and comfort provided by the original teachings. Of course, we're talking here about the fact that the ancient Aramaic language is the root language of what stands as the foundation for at least five of the world's major religions. And, you know, when you stop and think about it, you say, well, boy, that must be quite a religious language, that Aramaic. Actually, it's not a religious language at all. It's a language of physics. It's a language of psychology. It's a language of physiology. It's a language of genetics. When you go back to the Aramaic, the roots. But then when you move to a language that doesn't have the level of confidence in understanding those subjects, then everything becomes shaky. And as it moves from a translator to translator to translator, you know, going from the Aramaic in which it was originally written, even though the Greeks will tell you, oh, no, we wrote it. No. I know Western scholarship wants to make that claim, but it's just silly. It's just, you know, not even the least bit tenable. In any event, as we get further away, you know, Aramaic, Greek, Old English to Modern English, it gets further and further away from the truth. And I believe, I personally, that the reason it's the root of at least five of the world's major religions is because it had those understandings in its origins. And, of course, men have misinterpreted. So Richard asked the question, well, why would the teaching be distorted? There's three possibilities that I see. One is the expression of the ideas could have been limited by the ability of the language into which they were translated. Recall, the two-dimensional creature, and this is an earlier example that we used. Recall, the two-dimensional creature we talked about earlier had no words to express the truth about the three-dimensional world. Language can only express understanding for which it has words. Second possibility is the level of understanding of the translators, who had little or no actual experience with the transforming power of the Aramaic teachings, without realizing that they watered down this powerful ancient wisdom to their limited capacity. Can you possibly translate something beyond your level of comprehension? I'm not sure what you're saying, Michael. Well, let's use an example. Would you want to go to a chemistry lab and perform a complex and dangerous experiment on the instructions of a first-year chemistry student who doesn't even know the language of higher chemistry? Well, of course not. I want a competent, experienced instructor. Who knows? Exactly. Who knows? That's what I need. I would at least want the input of someone who had actually performed the experiment and had it work, came the emphatic reply. And it's interesting that, you know, if you look at this teaching, you hear this man in Aramaic speak of living life in and out of the experience of love and doing that with great gusto. And then you hear people raging and screaming, supposedly based on those texts, but they're raging and screaming from the contents of their own minds, not anything based on the texts that they're supposedly representing. And you know, we've spent years where in the original translation work that we had 25 translators who were really, you know, some of the top Aramaists in the world. And they spent, I mean, countless hours, countless dollars working to come up with the first century meaning of the Aramaic words as they the context and the content in an accurate representation of their meanings in the first century. And of course, if you wander away from that experience, you try to use words to describe an experience, you go, well, I haven't had this experience, so these words don't fit. And you start substituting words, you start substituting ideas, and it's just, you know, it's mind-boggling. So what we're looking to do is to stick with, we've actually got a four-hour video called Aramaicisms. And in the Aramaicisms video, a scholar named Dale Allen Hoffman and myself spend 4 hours in a discussion. The word Aramaicism is the word that I coined to represent our effort to get back to the being, you know, in full agreement with and restoring the fidelity of the meanings of those words in their original context. When you have the brain cells to do that, all of a sudden, everything in those texts take on such significance and such power. But absent the experience and the verbiage to represent it, it gets lost. You know, let's take just one word. You know, the question is asked of this man, Yeshua, what do I have to do to really live a human life? What's first, they say to him, in the law of being human? And we're told by the Greeks that he said, well, just love the God and love your neighbor as yourself. And, you know, then you're rocking. Of course, sadly, many people are following that rule, and there's so much self-hatred, and that's one of the reasons why we have so much abuse and violence in the world. People are doing exactly that. But that isn't even a shadow of the representation of what he said in the first century Aramaic language. What he said in that language was, have rachma when you think of the Creator. Have rachma when you think of your neighbor. And by so doing, you will maintain self. Now, you know, of course, you got to know what rachma means. What is rachma? Rachma is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that is a gateway for the entry of love into the human form, the created essence that we are, love, to enter into the human form. If that's closed down, there's no human life in the human form. And people live in what the scriptures call the mind of man. And then there's living in the mind that was called, and again, this is thought to be a religious idea. There's nothing religious about it. You can live in the mind of man, or you can live in the mind of love, which in the ancient Aramaic was called the mind, the word the Greeks translated to, and which used today generally, is Christ. But then that's thought to be some man's mind, and it's not. It's to live in the same mind that he lived in, to be of like mind with Christ. What mind is that? Read that passage, and it says, who thought it not robbery to be equal with the Creator and yet remain humble. In other words, instead of it becoming an ego trip, you live in the mind of love, which is literally the mind of the Creator. And when you do that, when you're facing, you know, any ideas or any experience with the Creator or with a neighbor, and in Aramaic, neighbor means anybody that you think about, if you maintain the condition of love in your mind when you're thinking of neighbor, because you are love, you've maintained self. So it wasn't about, you know, as yourself, love the neighbor as the self, but by rachma being present, love, your created essence was present, and you were able to maintain your human life. People who don't know that think they can go off in a rage and off in a fit, and, you know, they can sock it to that guy over there, and they're doing just fine. They have no idea. They've destroyed themselves. It's just such a different mindset, such a different way of even conceiving of the world. And so we're here to reestablish those first century meanings. And of course, the key word, love, of course, is one of the words we're looking to reestablish. Rachma, we're looking to establish that because there's no such, even such concept. There are many words in Aramaic that are represented by one word that it takes a whole paragraph to explain in the English language because there's just no such concept. There's no such construct available to us. And so once you build the brain cells for those Aramaic meanings, all of a sudden this becomes a teaching on how your physiology works, how your perceptual constructs work to either align and support you functioning as a human or align with the world mind that takes this pure presence of love. And in the average case, if you've got a, seeing as how we're participating in raising this little one that just blesses us every day. She's now 32 months, circling, a little less than that, 31 months, I guess. And it's amazing that they can take someone who comes into the world as the pure presence of love, and within 2 years, notice they call it the terrible twos, they can have that mind so degraded that the child they refer to, that sweet presence they refer to, is terrible. I mean, how bizarre is that? And yet being fed the concepts, the insanity, the rages, the fears, the traumas of the world, of course one goes into, this is terrible, and starts to function on those, and then of course they're beat back into submission so that they behave, so that they conform to the norms of a culture based in rage and fear. Yeah, the kids are going to go through quite a traumatic time in doing that. And the result of that training, that hostility and fear-based training, they call that human life. And human life, love has been beat out of the child. Then, of course, the child is told, now go out that door and find somebody to love or find somebody to love you. And love has become something that it isn't. Forgiveness has become something that it isn't. And concept after concept after concept after concept becomes something that it isn't. And so we're here to erase the conflicts, reestablish, understand ourselves, and reestablish in the world mind the actual meaning of those Aramaic teachings, and, of course, in particular, the tool of forgiveness. Tool of forgiveness, which, if you look at that word in this culture, if you go along with the Greek idea, basically what they say is, in essence, well, they did something really terrible. That's why you're in pain, and it really is all their fault, but it's okay. You just forgive them. Then everything will be okay. And we've been fed such a weak shadow of what forgiveness is. I have pain moving in me, so I'm supposed to let you off the hook so I can feel better. Because the Greeks have basically told us forgiveness is how I let you off the hook for what you did to me. What we're looking to do is to reestablish the meaning of the word forgive, which is a tool which, if I'm in pain, I recognize there's an energy in me causing my pain, and I will benefit and gain by removing the energy that causes my pain. And as I remove it, I'm restored to the mind of love, which is my birthright to think with. We're all given the same gift. It's our birthright. And the world mind has taken us so far from that that it's just bizarre. And so our project together is to bring forward those first century words and to make them available, to create a permanent record on planet Earth, and I'm so appreciative of this technology that we have called Blog Talk, so that few minutes after the show is over, you can go to their to our website and you can download a copy of the show and have it in your in your phone or your computer or what have you. And that we have those archives for these conversations. It's such an awesome blessing. So we're delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation. And Ms. Jean, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is quiet. Let's see. Lisa says she is on day 5 of a modified Master Cleanse. She's having a salad of fruit midday. If she's feeling extra hungry, she's doing a salad or fruit midday.
Nice.
Very good. We've done something similar to that here lately as well. We're not for straight days in a row, but that's good. We have done it in the past. We actually one time did 40 days of just juice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then we've done 14 days straight on lemon water, cayenne pepper.
Back about 23 or 24 years ago, I did a 40-day fast on popcorn. That was kind of fun, kind of interesting. It's all I ate.
Now, Dad
days.
Could do that.
Dad almost does that already, doesn't he? Jeez, Dad, we buy this pre-made popcorn that he just loves. And, I mean, there's always 10 bags of, like, huge bags of it in the house at the time. And 2 o'clock in the morning, we hear something going on downstairs. We'll go down and there's Dad sitting at the kitchen table with his third bowl of popcorn. Or at 2 in the afternoon or anytime, 10 minutes before dinner, we go down and catch him. Dad, please put that away. We're getting ready for dinner. But anyway, yeah, it's interesting. One of the, and I've been thinking recently, I haven't mentioned this week, but thinking recently about doing maybe an extended fast. It's just been coming to mind more and more. So sitting here, not being on the road and not exercising the way that, we normally did, hauling in tapes and books and out and, all of that. Could use a bit of an intermission of food and do that. But anyway.
I'd actually thought about doing that when we do our 10-day trip to St. Louis.
Yeah, the only thing is we're going to be hanging out with kids that are going to want to go out for dinner.
Yeah.
That probably wouldn't be the best timing.
Oh, we have a hand that just went up.
Land. Oh, great. Let's say hello.
All right. There you go. 205, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, this is Bridget. Blessings to you.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome. Haven't heard your voice in a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. But I have been working on the forgiveness and self-love and getting rid of negative energy.
Right.
Trying to understand what is it that I could be thinking or doing that is causing me to be so hypersensitive to the electromagnetic radiation that I feel it all of the time.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm
You know, it's not something that I've spent a lot of time looking at. And so I couldn't point you in any given direction except to say that, when the energy system gets to its tolerance point of toxicity, and that could be any kind of toxicity, it could be toxicity from mental energy patterns, physical, food, allergy, any number of things. But when it gets to its tolerance point, that's when any one of those things can push it over the edge. And so some people can hang out in electromagnetic fields and seemingly have no impact whatsoever. And as you say, you found yourself to be sensitive. So I'd be looking at what kind of things have I been engaging in, am I eating clean food, maybe organic? How am I doing with my relationships? Hostility and fear, is that much of a part of my life? And look at how many of those toxic loads you can let go of. And as you do that, the tendency usually then is, you know, one of those things that we're hypersensitive to, the sensitivity will tend to reduce. It's been my experience of it. But I don't have any, you know, it's not something I've specialized in or really looked at, specific thoughts or guidance on what is the electromagnetic toxicity about specifically.
Is that a question?
Have you come up with any clues? Have you, as you've been doing that?
Yes, I think a lot of it is because of negative circumstances and upbringing, false and ungodly beliefs, a wrathful fear of God that has been used to control and manipulate.
Yeah.
I think some of that has, you know, is contributing to it.
Are you doing work
tapes
around those issues?
Say that again.
Are you doing worksheets around those issues?
Well, I'm actually just doing it on the phone, and like I'll write down my emotion score, and then what I'm feeling, and what I think the truth is about what I'm feeling. But I believe that a lot of it is something that I'm just not cognizant of because I thought that I was working through those and had gotten to a place of forgiveness, especially for my mother, who, you know, the relationship has been very challenging and still is. So I have my boundaries, but doesn't seem to do any good because anytime there's an interaction, it becomes turbulent. So when I get off of the phone with her or interaction with her, I immediately go to something positive to restore myself.
Right.
Self-love and acceptance, and, you know, that's not you. And you're worthy of the acceptance and love from your mother, and you're worthy to be, you know, loved. And respected, and yeah, that I don't have to, out of fear of God's wrath, have to take abuse. So yeah,
for sure.
I've been working through those things, and I do. I really ponder on what is it that I am. It's got to be something in my subconscious. Because my immediate prayer and thoughts are for blessings and the joy for her, for me, and for anyone.
Right. Well, the thought that keeps coming that might be helpful, one of the tools that we've used over the years is there's a way, it's a pretty simple process, and if you like, we can guide you through it in regard to mom and see if it makes an impact for you. But it's called emotional release, where if there are, you know, when you get around her, all of a sudden all these emotional stirrings happen. It's, of course, because those emotions are still there, and there's attachment to, you know, mom behaving a certain way, or those emotions come forward. And there's a really simple process where you center yourself inside your brain and just ask Rooka for support in releasing those attachments. It's a pretty simple process. It only takes a minute to do. And in fact, if everybody in the audience, you know, if you've got anybody that, you know, every time you get around them, there's their emotional responses, this tool can be a powerful release of those things. I've seen some people have used it, and it hasn't been effective at all, but I've seen other people, and it's just, it's really changed their relationships significantly. So if you'd like to do that release process around mom, we could do it right now.
Oh, yes. By all means.
Be glad to guide you through it.
Okay.
Well, then, as we're guiding you through it, we'll invite everybody who's listening, if there's somebody in your life that you feel you've still got some emotional responses to, then we'll invite you to follow these instructions. And you know, maybe over the next day or two or week or three, whatever, share with us. We'll call back and just see if you've noticed any differences. Again, I've seen people who have made major changes, especially in their immediate relationships. And other people, like, you know, that wasn't the issue. That wasn't the core of it. So it really didn't make much difference. But the if you would just, you know, follow these instructions, we'll see what happens. And, of course,
okay,
when we get to the release phase, we're going to bring in the Aramaic idea of Ruka Dikudsha. And,
of what?
You know, for anybody who may not be familiar, the Aramaic term is Ruka, R-U-K-H-A, D apostrophe, K-O-O-D-S-H-A, Ruka Dikudsha. Now, they're the words that the Greeks translated as the Holy Spirit in from the Aramaic language. But in Aramaic, there's nothing there about, you know, a disembodied spirit being here, whatever. Ruka Dikudsha speaks of literally an elemental force in us. You know, fire is an elemental force. Wind is an elemental force. Well, there's an elemental force that the Aramaic peoples understood was a support energy that was implanted in every human mind from the beginning, and specifically, by definition in Aramaic, this elemental force, if enlisted, if invited into activity, undoes the effects of your errors and teaches you the truth. So that's what you're asking that power to do. And it's quite amazing when you allow that to open and let that energy flow. So when I invite you, I'm going to give you a release phrase, and the release phrase will start with asking that power for help, just so that you know what we're doing there and everybody else who chooses to do it. So what I'm going to do, there's a specific place in the brain that, if you're centered, seems to make this more effective. And that's what I've come to call the seat of the unconscious. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you some visualization to guide you to be centered there, ask you to just let me know when you're centered, and then I'm going to invite you to allow a picture of your mother to come to mind. When you're centered in that place and that picture of your mother comes to mind, then I'm going to invite you to use the phrase, and we'll short form Ruka Dikudsha to just Ruka. Ruka, I ask for support in releasing all attachment to my mother. And of course, anyone else who does it, if it's your father or your uncle or your brother or your sister or even yourself. And let's see what happens. So in order to become focused in that place, I'm going to invite you to imagine that I have two pencils that are made of light. And I'm going to insert those through one of them, through the top of your head, right at the very top center, what they call the crown chakra. I'm going to ask you to imagine that we're placing a pencil of light right down through the center of the top of your head, and then a second pencil going right through the center of the forehead, what people call the third eye. And so if you imagine those two pencil tips of light being inserted, the point where they meet is the seat of the unconscious. It's the place where you can release those attachments. So I'm going to ask you to just imagine, you know, whoever's listening, going to do this exercise, imagine that I'm placing these two pencils, one in the top center of your head, one in your center of your forehead, and inserting the light, and where those two lights meet is where I'm going to ask you to center your awareness. And when you're centered there, just let me know. And, of course, I'm going to invite you to continuously be aware of your breath and keep it moving. So you're centered there now? Okay.
Yeah.
And now, staying centered in that place, allow a picture of your mother to come to mind, and let me know when you've got that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then out loud, addressing and asking for support from this feminine elemental force in us that was known as Ruka, repeat the phrase, Rukka, I release all attachment to my mother. And of course, anyone else that's doing it would substitute the name of whoever they're doing it with. So breathe.
Yes. Look, I ask all, I release all detachment from my mom.
And allow yourself to breathe. And what happens with that picture?
She's in Yeshua's arms.
Okay, and are you feeling anything in your head, your hands, anywhere in your structure?
In my hands or in my head, you think? No.
Okay. Just stay in awareness, stay focused there. And once again, Rukka, I release all attachments to my mother.
Is Rukka the same thing as Ruach, Holy Spirit?
Yes. It would, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's what the Greeks translated it as. Yep, that's it.
Ruach.
And in Aramaic, it's this. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. What was the phrase again?
Rukka, I release all attachments to my mother.
Ruach, I release all attachments to my mom.
And allow your breath to move. And what's happening?
Nothing.
Okay, well, most people, when they step in and do this exercise, we usually feel, that's why I asked about your hands, we usually feel some level of tingling in their hands, perhaps the feet, perhaps the face.
I do feel it in my feet.
Do you? Okay.
In my feet.
So that when most people feel in their hands, but I've had many people who feel it in their feet and or their face, or they might feel just a little bit lightheaded. So if you're getting that energy moving in your feet, that's the energy of the release happening.
Okay.
And it's that simple. Again, I've seen this make major changes for people in situations and circumstances. So we'll hope that maybe some of those major changes you're ready for. You know, having done some work around mom and ready for release from those emotional reactions.
And how often? Just every time I have a negative interaction or thought.
If they come around again, but you might notice that they disappear. That's a very common experience with people who do this release. It's just like that reaction's gone.
Oh,
so let us know, you know, the next time you interact, to keep us posted on what happens with it. Let's see if she and you both are freed from those kinds of reactions.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yes,
thank
I'm
you.
With you 100%. Yeah, you're most welcome, and keep us posted if there's any other support we can
give. I will.
Okay,
will.
Any
thank
other
you.
Thoughts on your mind for today?
I'm getting healthy. I am eating clean. And I've bought Body Shield to help with the energy. Trying to get out of my apartment lease so that I can move to a more rural area around more country and nature. So,
right, where you don't have the concentration of electromagnetic fields.
Yeah.
I have some friends. I have some friends who are quite electromagnetic sensitive, and at night when they're going to sleep, they have their things like refrigerators and such on a special circuit, And except for things like refrigeration or air conditioning or heating, they literally turn off their power box. So everything, all the electromagnetics in the house are shut down while they sleep, except for things like a refrigerator that needs to keep running.
I do the same.
You know, the wall.
But I live in an apartment complex, and the energy is coming from below and behind me.
Yeah, that's definitely another level of challenge when you're in a common living situation like that. And oftentimes, buildings, apartment buildings have antennas on the roofs for, repeater signals and all that for cell phones and all kinds of crazy stuff with the electronic world that we're living in today. So.
Yeah, it's pretty severe. And it forces, my lifestyle, because of this effectiveness, it's very difficult to concentrate and stay organized because I'm constantly having to leave my apartment and go ground myself because the energy is so strong. And I'm speaking healing over me, but it has been.
I'm with you on that.
It's been extremely difficult.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much, and I can really feel it.
Well, a whole space that a rural setting just happens to pop up out of the blue that's a perfect setting for you, get you far enough away from those concentrated fields that you get to do some recovery, and that if there are any other, perhaps moving some of these blocks out of the way with mom will open your intuition on a level as to other things that you can do to support yourself.
Yes. Say that last line again.
Just that as you remove these blocks, as you remove whatever blocks are there, oftentimes a block around one area of our lives will block other areas of our lives as well. And so I was just speaking of, the opening of intuition for you on another level for your guidance to let you know specifically what will be helpful. So hold the space that strengthens and opens and gives you the next level of guidance that you need to be able to just, move this whole issue out of your world.
I receive that. And I live in expectation that I will be completely healed from this.
And we're here to hold the space for that to happen.
Yeah, amen. Thank you so much.
All right, young lady. All right, lots of love and blessings. Take care.
Love and blessings.
Bye. Bye-bye. All right, yeah, that's an issue that's becoming bigger and bigger on the planet all the time with all the different electromagnetic devices that the world is developing and 5G coming in. Of course, there's a lot of conspiracy theory stuff around that, but, we are, no question about it, electromagnetic beings. And, of course, when electromagnetic fields come along that operate in the same range as, say, let's say our own cells, our own genes, our own minds, then those energetic patterns can definitely be a challenge. And, of course, intuition functioning and keeping ourselves in alignment with the highest and best can at least minimize those impacts as much as possible. So we're all in space. And Miss Jeannie, it looks like we've got about 16 minutes or so to go. So do we have anybody else out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody with a thought in the chat room for us?
No, it's all quiet. And just for general information, besides listening to today's repeat, in the notes for today, I'm also putting a link to where you did the release technique once before, and we separated a pre-recording of you walking through it. It's about a 7-minute recording, so you can either re-listen to today or you can click on the link in the notes for today and listen to that recording.
Sweet. Maybe, if you've got a handle on that, maybe you could email that link to me or text that link to me. I'd like to send it to. I had just done it a few days ago with someone who's been dealing with some pretty big stresses in their lives, so send them a copy of it. So if you're out there in listener land, we've got lots of time for conversation, and we'd love to hear from you. What's on your mind? If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. And if you push 1, that will raise a hand in our control panel, and we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. And if you're out there in listener land, most people listen to the show on their phones directly, but there are several other venues you can listen on. And so if we're not able to talk to you directly, if you call that phone number, we'll be having a conversation. Beyond that, you know, we've just completed our second online Codependence communication practicum, and with its completion, for me, one of the things that really became clear, and you know, we've talked over and over and over again over the years about how it's been very well established scientifically that our eye doesn't see anything happening outside of us, that it's our brain that makes up the visual pictures that we look at. So perception is a construct of the mind, and perception can be a servant of cellular memory and things that have gone on in the past, so that each time a certain perceptual experience is called into play, the mind generates that experience out of the past and uses that past experience as a substitute for what's actually happening in the moment. So many people are not seeing or experiencing what's actually going on in the world. What they're experiencing is their mind's replay of past traumas. And so perception being a construct of the mind, if we get locked in, there's a powerful line in the Course in Miracles, the lesson, What is the World? And what it says there is that perception is a skill we made up to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. And so, you know, we've established that the purpose behind the forgiveness tool in Aramaic, by the mechanics of how forgiveness works, you know, in the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shebag, and it literally means to cancel. And, of course, when you think about, well, if the word that meant forgive, or we've translated, the Greek translated forgiveness means shebag or cancel, what does that mean? What am I supposed to cancel? And what we realize is that there's some Harvard research that says there's a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire. The max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. Very tiny fragment of information becomes conscious. And so when the mind generates a construct out of the past, there are only 9 bits of data that are going into it. Obviously, something has to determine which 9 bits of data are going to be used to generate the perception of the moment. And so what you realize is that the goal you hold is the driver that causes your mind to use certain data, you know, on this occasion and certain data on a different occasion. And so perception is driven by goals. You'll notice that, you know, unless you're just a generally miserable person, you're pretty much pretty happy with most everybody as long as they're doing what you want them to do. In other words, as long as they're fulfilling your goals. But notice, again, unless you're a generally miserable person, the only time you're ever upset with people is when they're not fulfilling the goals you hold for them. Now you think, well, if they're not fulfilling my goal, they deserve my wrath or my hostility or my fear or my manipulation, whatever is going on. And you know, sometimes people do pretty crazy things. And if we watch them do that, we might all agree that person really deserves your wrath, your rage, what have you. But it's kind of a trick question to ask if they deserve it, because when I generate it, I'm the one who gets the original. They only get a carbon copy. And they may not be home for delivery. So the real question I want to ask myself is, because this person doesn't follow what I want them to do, doesn't fulfill my goal, is that a reason for me to dump? Let's say if my response to try and get people back in line is rage, it's a pretty common one. If I respond in rage to try to get them to do what I want them to do, I get the original rage. Do I deserve that? And if I don't, maybe it's time for me to stop. And so the action of forgiving comes from canceling a goal which collapses the perceptual construct. And when a perceptual construct collapses, it collapses in on itself. So by collapsing it, by canceling the goal that's causing the mind to use this fear or this sadness or this grief or this rage to build your perception in the moment, if you collapse that and that perception collapses in on itself, it gives you closer and closer access to what's at the root of that pain or trauma. And so when you collapse that perception in on itself, it's like the conscious mind, that 9-bit space, is emptied. And when it's emptied, there's room for the truth to show up. There's room for a whole different way of seeing to become available. You know, people say, well, you know, I had this insight over the years of teaching forgiveness and working with individuals. It always amazes me when I'm with someone who comes across this idea and cancels a goal, and what pops to awareness, what their revelation is when they cancel that goal. And it's oftentimes, oh my God, I never knew that was in me. Or the upset part, it's like, you know, before I did this forgiveness thing, that issue, that was so big and it was so important, and man, I would rage over that any day. And now I look at it, it's like, it's really foolish. Why did I do that? Well, the only reason you did it is because it's there. And when you forgive it, that is, remove it, that's what forgiveness means, then you're freed of it. So, and it's interesting, if you look at the Course in Miracles, the definition of forgiveness there is precisely identical to the definition of forgiveness in the ancient Aramaic. In fact, if you read the passage in the Course about forgiveness, and I did not have the brain cells to recognize what these instructions meant until I had come across and understood forgiveness from the Aramaic. And there are only two places on the planet that I've seen an exact and specific definition of what forgiveness means. And what the Course says is, let go, of course that's to cancel, let go all the things you think you want. What are the things you think you want? Your goals. And then in the Course it refers to your goals as your trifling treasures. In other words, out of the ego, I want this, I want this, I want, I want, I want, I want. And when those goals are placed in the mind, then whatever those goals resonate is what fills the mind with perception. And the truth is, most of the things that your ego says you want, you don't want at all except for avoidance sake. So the things you think you want become trifling treasures. So the Course says, let go all the things you think you want, your trifling treasures put away, and leave a clean and open space within your mind for love to come. What happens when we void the space of the mind of its hostility and fear for love to fill in the blanks? And that's called revelation. So if you're an upset, if you're disturbance and your mind is telling you that your upset is about what's going on out there, recognize that's not what is happening at all. Painful memories in the mind, unresolved generational traumas, literally are stored in such a way as content that they are transparently merged into those perceptual constructs. And when they show up, I mean, the same thing that went on with, you know, one guy 5 years ago and another person 10 years another ago and another person 20 years ago, when it comes up today, I say, yeah, and Hortense made me so mad. And I've been through this mad, you know, 87 different times with 42 different people. Why? Because that unresolved pain or trauma, oftentimes, that's gone on for generations, literally, energetically, is weaved, you know, it's like a piece of cloth. It's weaved into my perceptual constructs. And when that happens, again, you know, the title of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It appears as though this particular trauma, this thing that's agonizing me today, is a separate one from the one that agonized me 6 months ago and 2 years ago and 5 years ago and 10 years ago. But when I drop into the root of it, I see that they're not all, you know, traumas that are caused by today's unique situation. That's the lie. The underlying dynamics of denial, dissociation, projection. You know, when I deny ownership for what's going on within me, I have to dissociate from the cause of what's going on within me. And that makes the cause of what's going on inside of me available for anyone to manipulate me into experiencing. So they do a behavior that causes that which I've been trying to hide from myself. And when those brain cells fire, they literally create the picture world that I see. They create my perception. And when I realize that that perception is a projection of old content, that's when I have the opportunity to change it. But otherwise, we believe that, you know, whatever that original trauma was, is really happening again today. And people say, well, you know, it's just, why is this happening over and over and over and over again? Well, it only happened once. It's just been replayed over and over and over again. The truth is, it doesn't happen to you again. It's the same event. Once you
have a hand
grasp that, okay, sweetie. Well, we're down to about 90 seconds, so I'm going to just continue with these thoughts. We really don't have time to do another conversation, so I'm just going to finish this thought, and the show will be complete. But please call early tomorrow so we've got lots of time to talk, whoever's got their hand up. So My take is, and I'm saying this from personal experience, there's been a new level for me in engaging in this understanding and these tools, that having seen how when I cancel a goal and I free myself of a trauma, what frees me of the trauma is that all of a sudden I get a different construct. I get this revelatory information that it's always based in love at that moment. And it opens space to honor truth on deeper and deeper levels. And one of the key thoughts about changing the content of the mind is that if you like your lies, you're going to always see them. And if there's hostility or fear going on in your mind, it's a lie. When you cancel, collapse, forgive, revelation is yours, and everything changes. But you've got to honor truth for that to happen. First law, honor truth. Thanks for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.